Interested in ghosts? UFOs? How about the occult? Are you psychic? Would you like to find out? Well, if you're intrigued by the world's curiosities and all that is paranormal, then Paralore.com is a place for you. Create your own profile, start a photo album, write a blog, or just hang out and watch countless hours worth of paranormal videos while chatting with other Paralore members. Who knows? You could win a prize or two if you're quick and brave enough. It's all here, and it's all free. Visit www.paralore.com and join today. Again, membership is free, and we know you won't be disappointed.
Paralore.com. Unlock your mind.
Hey, Scott O. I just want to thank you for this sweet Go See Talk t-shirt, man. When I put it on, women just start coming at me from all directions.
Well, no problem, dude.
Oh, yeah, and check this out. Hey, this rash on my chest for like 3 months, right? The first time I wore this Go See Talk t-shirt for the day, I took it off before bed and the rash was gone.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I also worked at a job interview I had last week, and not only did I get the job, but the boss liked it so much, he made me his partner.
Huh?
Yeah, and I'm now a millionaire because of your Ghostly Talk t-shirts.
Well, you know, we not only have new t-shirts for 2007, but Ghostly Talk also has a brand new line of bumper stickers and 1 1/4-inch buttons.
You're kidding!
No, sir. You can check them out and also find out how to order them at ghostlytalk.com.
I must go and order all of them now!
Whoa, hold on. Save some for the rest of the listeners. As you can see, Ghostly Talk swag is going fast, so head on over to ghostlytalk.com and check it out. T-shirts, bumper stickers, and 1 1/4-inch buttons, all for a very cheap price. Order yours today.
Why? Oh, well, whatever, that's fine. It's not like I haven't tried. I told you what. before you walk away.
When you flashed, I saw what looked like a figure standing in the hall.
Okay, this is Screen Team. We're ready for EVP sweep.
That is weird. These cameras don't do this.
Water supposedly will come off and on in various rooms.
It's an EMF meter. Started this going haywire.
You're listening to the number one source for paranormal evidence brought to you firsthand by real investigators in the field. No hoaxes, no disinformation. You're listening to The Ghost Project.
I found myself face to face with someone or something that was attempting to play with my psyche as well as my physical being.
How sure are you of that?
I'm 100% sure of that.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk with Doug, Scott L., and Bonnie.
Oh, are we back?
I have an unwanted condition.
I think Doug, you have two in the room with you.
Doug is sitting there paying attention more to his soda than to, like, the program.
Who do we have on the phone
I'm
right now?
Sorry.
No, it's all right.
Dale Kaczmarek has been actively investigating paranormal phenomena since 1975. He works with psychics which help complement his investigative work, whether local or out of state. He's conducted many investigations concerning ghost lights, haunted houses, battlefields, cemeteries, Indian burial grounds, murder sites, churches, and sacred sites. He personally directs Excursions into the Unknown Incorporated, Haunted Chicagoland Tours, which is part of the Oak Lawn Chamber of Commerce. The website is www.ghostresearch.org, which, of course, will be linked up at ghostlytalk.com.
Forever.
Dale Kaczmarek. Finally, welcome to Ghostly Talk. It's been forever, and we
shame on you.
Never hooked up before.
My pleasure to be on tonight.
Yeah, it's and I have to point this out, Dale. You're another one of those wonderful people that we aspire to look up to and follow your work. And we've been in the same building several times, right? But it's just been one of those things where we're all so busy in the midst of our own stuff that we never get to really talk. And we've been trying to thwart this issue with people like yourself the last couple of months here. I've been like, okay, we need to talk to these people. I want to talk to these folks, and hopefully, you know, next time we see each other, we'll go, hey, I had you on the show. Let's talk. So it's good to have you on finally. I actually get to have a conversation with you, Dale.
My pleasure.
Now, you've been doing this stuff longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
I was I was born in 75, so you were doing this when I was born, Dale.
Doug was 40.
Eight. No, I wasn't 40 at the time. I was 8.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wouldn't have been out in the...
I was 2.
I wouldn't have been out in the field working with Dale, but I did indeed start paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit after, or around that time, probably.
Yeah.
So that's when I started getting into paranormal stuff, just reading books or whatever. I could do it at 8-year-old, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting stuff. So pretty much, essentially, for some people's lifetimes, you've been doing ghost research and studying.
I think that makes you a veteran, sir.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, you know, okay, I have to mention this, and I don't know if I've mentioned this complaint yet. You know, we just spent an hour talking with someone about how we have to get rid of all the unwanted things in our, you know, all the stressors and stuff like that. What am I going to do here right now? Totally stress myself out and complain, but I got to do it, right? Some people, Dale, and I know this isn't the case for you, but we've been... with a lot more of the paranormal media and celebrity thing going on out there now, you know, we get a lot of bios, right? We read a lot of bios, right? And, no, this isn't like that. This is a different thing, right? But I'll get a bio, and it'll say, like, you know, so-and-so has been researching ghosts for over 25 years. And the person's like, you know, 28.
Right.
And I go, now, wait a minute, okay? Now, and I will say, and I think I've been very clear about how I, you know, what we, you know, as far as me, you know, I got into this stuff when I was very young, but I had a lapse for years there. I had other stuff going on, right? So I wasn't actively pursuing this field, but then, you know, about 10 years ago, I started doing it again, right? But there was a big chunk there that I didn't have anything to do with. Just because you read a book when you were 3 years old about the paranormal does not mean you've been into the paranormal for the last 25 years or whatever it was. Point number one. Let's just get that out there.
It's
out of my system now. I feel better. Dale, you know what I'm talking about, right, Dale?
Yeah, it kind of shows my age here a little bit, too, I guess.
But no, you have been working on this that long.
Nothing but respect from us.
Yeah, completely. I want to throw a little curveball in here, if you don't. Or Doug, did you want to?
No, that's good.
Because we did mention Excursions into the Unknown Incorporated. This is a tour that you do, am I correct?
Yeah, it's a tour that we began actually back in 1982. We're actually starting our 26th year of doing this ghost tour in Chicago. It was something I set up a number of years ago to kind of show people what a haunted location might look like, to experience the aura, if you will, of a haunted site. And all the locations that we put on the site are highly researched, you know, by our group to begin with. So it's not like somebody goes out in the middle of the night and sees something and goes on a tour right away. These are very highly researched. I mean, we do a lot of research. We try to interview the people that have experiences, go back into history, which history and hauntings go hand in hand. These locations, you know, there's more than 175 locations that I know of right here in the Chicagoland area and suburbs.
Really?
And that's just public places. So those aren't private homes, private businesses, and that's really only the tip of the iceberg pretty much here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to switch the tours pretty much every year where we have different sites, different locations, different off the bus stops. And I think it's very entertaining as well as getting people's, I guess, feet wet, if you will, to that have never been to a haunted site before, and you never know what, you know, may happen.
Oh, yeah, completely. We've been to Chicago a couple of times here with our contingent, and obviously the city is chalked full of history. It goes without saying.
Yeah.
There's just so many things that have happened in that area, which, granted, to me, makes perfect sense. And you mentioned, you know, and this comes up a lot here, but I'll mention it again. You mentioned a second ago about how hauntings and histories, you know, they're hand in hand. Oh, God. There's been people, you know, didn't we say this before, Doug? There are people out there that say that history has nothing to do with a haunting whatsoever.
Yeah, I have heard that, and I have no idea how anybody could think that. I mean, maybe a ghost is floating around, but I would think
there has to be a reason.
I've always seen it, you know, tied with the emotion of the person, or they want to be there, or they need to be there for unfinished business, or you know, something, the spirit brings the spirit to these locations. And that, you know, Dale, one of the things that I like is that you could go on your tour, right, on the tour, and 1 year, and then go back the next year for business or whatever and say, you know, I got a free night, and get a completely different tour because of the sheer number of haunted places in Chicago.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we have a number of different special theme tours we do specifically in spring and summer that are specific themes, like tragic events tour that have a lot of places that have tragedy associated with it, and that kind of goes hand-in-hand along with ghost hunting, untimely death.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have places like around the St. Valentine's Day Massacre around that time of the year for kind of a murder gangster tour.
Oh, yeah.
We have a graveyards tour. We have a south side, north side tour. I mean, it kind of flip-flops all around throughout the spring and summer, but the Halloween tours are usually different. We have about 10 different tours that we are currently running, and we kind of flip-flop those, and as we get new material, we kind of add a new material than with the old tours, so kind of make them different all the time.
Okay, so there's a lot. I mean, there is obviously with over 170 different locations on this tour, there's a lot for people to check out, and a lot of stores, especially St. Valentine's Day Massacre. I'd love to just go. I mean, I've been there.
Well, see, like that wouldn't change. Like if you go on a St. Valentine's Day Massacre,
you don't move like the castle from Crawl or anything like that.
Right,
it stays right where it
is. Stays right where it is. But the
shows my
age,
by the way.
What kind of folks come to Chicago and go on the tour? I imagine there's just business people who fly in who have business in Chicago and they're looking through their list of things to
do
and there's something interesting. I imagine there's probably families and there's undoubtedly ghost hunters and but what's the like general makeup of folks that you would meet on a typical night?
Well, most often it's people that are just simply interested in ghosts. They may have been looking for something to do. We are listed with AAA Chicago Motor Club. We're listed in different tourism bureaus around the city here, and they can easily find places to go on tours, and these are kind of unique tours, bus tours that we do. And typically it's people that are just finding something kind of unique to do. We do have a lot of tours that we do for park districts and libraries and senior groups and civic organizations and so forth, too. But the bulk of it seems to be just people that are coming to Chicago who just want to find something really kind of off the beaten path to do, just not a normal tour.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, with all these locations, and I guess this is where we'll move here. I mean, I just... That's super cool, and I want to go on one of these tours.
I can't think of 75 in Detroit, let alone 175. It's like,
well, I'm sure there's plenty of haunted places we just don't know about them, but I'm sure
we don't venture south of 8 Mile. Well,
wow.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Woo! Well, you really just lit that one. I was just going to say there's probably a lot of hauntings down there, you know, because they're murder capital of the country.
Well, yeah.
So I'm sure there's stuff going on, but it just isn't documented. I mean, it may be in the police files, but... You know,
well, that's so true.
Yeah, you know, I always, you know, Dale, I got, you know, this is just, I've always laughed to myself about this too, because, you know, people have come to us over the years and said, you know, maybe you guys should start doing tours and stuff in Detroit, and I'm like, I no. can't really think of like 10 places we could take you to.
Can we get a bulletproof tour bus?
Yeah, I don't want to put people in that kind of danger. You know,
well,
put on
the
people
thing.
Mover and let them run around in that thing. Here, look at that. That's Greektown. Ooh, wow.
When I was in Chicago, Dale, I wanted to holler out the window, go inside, lock yourself in your house. Why are you out and about on the street? You know, because evidently Chicago's a lot safer than Detroit.
Yeah, well, we're not used to that.
You are not visible outside of a vehicle or your car at night ever in Detroit.
I can tell you when I went to Chicago with Sean. Sean helped me find the one place in Chicago that you didn't want to be. That was very much like Detroit.
It'll help you feel at home that weekend.
And it did.
Yeah.
The doors were locked. I was sitting lower in my seat.
So you were in South Chicago or whatever?
South Chicago, sure. But no,
probably Cabrini Green.
What was that, Dale?
I said probably Cabrini Green.
I'm not sure, but it was very much like Detroit.
Well, with all these different locations you have that you take people on their tours, and like you just said a few minutes ago too, you guys have done the investigative work on a lot of these places. A lot of these
the history
and the investigations. I'm just wondering. I mean, this is with all these locations. This is probably a ridiculous question to ask, but with your investigative work, is there a couple that really stick out to you that really? Because we've been on. Just like last weekend, we were on a tour in Cape Cod, and Derek was like, "This place right here is the place that really freaks me out." Like when I do investigative work, remember the one house?
Right.
Is there a place like that on your tour, Dale? Where you know, it's just one of those locations that you've done work there, and it really sticks out to you, or maybe you've had an experience there.
Well, with 175 locations or more, there's quite a few that actually stick out, but if I was to name the top three, I would probably say Hull House in downtown, Resurrection Cemetery, and Bachelor's Grove.
I've been to all three of those.
Now, I want to talk about the Hull House, because I've heard of the other two, I mean, and I've heard a lot of experiences. The Hull House, you've done work there, you said?
Well, we've done work about the place. I mean, the people at Hull House aren't too, should I say, happy with the ghost stories. If you remember what the history of Hull House is, it was basically built in 1856 for Charles Hull. Later, it was moved in by Jane Addams and Ellen Gates Starr, famous social workers in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And they focused on social programs and so forth. And that's what really the people at Hull House really want to focus on today, is not so much the ghost stories, but on Jane Addams' life and her experiences there when she was a social worker.
Okay.
And so we've done research about the place. We're not, I guess, really too welcome inside to do an investigation, but I've done a lot of research in it and talked to a lot of people who have had experiences. And there have been so many experiences, even during Jane Addams' time. And there are some stories that they will actually tell you about Jane Addams, which have been written about in her autobiography and her memoirs. But one in particular, when she was first moving into the house, at that time it was sort of a tenement house where a bunch of people were living in it, and they kind of warned her to leave a pitcher of water at the top stair of the attic. Otherwise, it was said the ghost from the attic would come down and create all sorts of problems. course, JAMS paid no attention to this and removed the pail of water, a pitcher of water, and things began happening. In fact, she was reading reports that her and people that came to social events there actually saw women dressed in white kind of floating up through the upstairs hallways, disappearing through solid doors and closed doors and solid walls. And reports more contemporary of strange monk-like figures that have been seen in the upstairs windows by people passing by the building at night, students, faculty, security patrols that go through the area. And quite a number of stories, including even a story dating back to about the turn of the century.
Okay.
A Herald Examiner reporter named Ben Hecht began to circulate a story about a woman who had given birth to, among other things, what was called a devil's child or demonic baby. And it was actually thought to have had cloven hooves for feet, a small tail, and horns on its head. It may have been what got the story of Rosemary's Baby, how that got started, the rumors in circulation about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jane Addams, being a Nobel Peace Prize winner, she devoted 44 pages of her autobiography called 20 Years at Hull House to an entire chapter called The Devil's Child.
Mm-hmm.
And it does talk about some of these reports. She kind of puts them as more, you know, folklore and just tales and people that were things that were being spun by the newspaper articles and so forth, and kind of denying that anything actually happened there. But throughout the years, when we've been doing these tours and we've been taking people on there past that building, and we can't go in it, but we do stop it at night. You can actually see in the building. They're all, you know, very easy to see. They've got glass doors, glass windows.
Uh-huh.
And people have taken pictures around there, have taken extraordinary pictures. I have one on my website that actually shows about four hooded figures actually on the stairs. They were taken back in 1979 with infrared film. Other people have taken strange mists, strange balls of light, kind of glowy figures. I've actually had videotapes sent to me by people that say that if you look at the windows, it looks like the curtains are parting in the center as though somebody's peering out at you, and there's nobody in the building at night. It's only a museum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of very interesting locations, interesting stories in that location that have been circulating probably for well over 30 years.
We've heard a lot about Hull House. That's come up a couple times on the show here. And you mentioned Resurrection Cemetery also. Now, The world famous Resurrection Cemetery. I mean, if you don't know what this location is, I mean, you need to go and read something. Have you had a personal?
Yeah, Google ghosts on the internet,
Chicago,
and you will come
ghosts,
off with Resurrection Cemetery. Yeah.
Now, have you had a personal experience there, Dale? By any chance?
No, but this is one of the stories that really got me involved in ghost research. This in Bachelor's Grove, and really, a lot of people ask me how I got involved with ghost research, and I kind of blame it on my parents for telling me ghost stories when I was a youngster. It kind of sounds kind of corny, but that's how it got started. My mom and dad, when they were dating back in the late 30s and early 40s, my dad's favorite thing to do on a date after the date with my mom was to drive around that cemetery looking for the ghost.
Uh-huh.
And that was back in the early 1940s, soon after the stories began circulating of this woman that had been apparently killed by a hit-and-run car, and been seen in a long white dress and a long blonde hair, kind of hitchhiking, walking along the road or stopping, looking back at traffic as though she wished to be picked up.
Mm-hmm.
So these were the kind of stories I first heard about when I was a very young boy, probably 6 or 7 years old. And really what got me started later in life to begin to research, investigate, and find out if these stories that I'd heard as a youngster were simply stories, or if they had some validity to them, if there was actually some encounters, some proof that these were more than just simply folktales.
Yeah.
I never had a personal encounter, nor did my mom and dad. Of course, my mom often told me that even if there was something, she never saw it at all because she had her hands covered her eyes and she was just screaming in the middle of the night. So the kind of stories that I heard really got me started. I've talked to so many credible people that have had an encounter with this ghost, dating all the way back to probably about 1976.
Mm-hmm.
Cab drivers, people that had no knowledge of the story, were not even believers in ghosts, did not even know perhaps where they were at the time, that had something very dramatic happen to them,
mm-hmm.
that left a lasting impression upon their psyche, if you will. And these are the kind of people that really kind of put more credence to the story than others that kind of repeat the same kind of scenario over and over again.
Yeah. We were just there last, October. Yeah, we were there for the conference. You know, there was just so many people out there.
Well, that's the thing. When we were
couldn't
there,
see anything.
And they really don't like it when you stop near there.
Oh, no, the cops came.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. The cops came after us. They basically shoot us out of there.
Yeah.
So there was like, there's a bar across the street from there, right, Dale?
Yeah, it's called Chet's Melody Lounge.
Yeah, that's where we were at the majority of the time, go figure, right? And, yeah, then we came out, you know, looking to hang out and check the thing out. And I know a few people got across the street to check the thing out, and then we were basically shoot away. The cops told us we couldn't go. There probably still has to be a ton of foot traffic around there every night from people just wanting to see if they can get a glimpse of that. So it's got to be, you know, just got to be very difficult. Even as a legitimate researcher to go in there, I think the gates are locked. You can't get in there at all. I mean,
No. And they've redone them and everything just to make sure.
Man.
Yeah, one kind of humorous story, we were actually doing a video shoot out there one day for, one evening, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning for a television show on Channel 5, which used to be called The Other Side.
Uh-huh.
That was a daily paranormal show. And we actually had they actually had hired an actress to dress up in a white dress. She had long blonde hair, and they were going to do recreations of, put in special effects of her running towards the gate and disappearing. And at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we had traffic up and down Archer. I mean, people were stopping, screeching, looking at this girl, thought it was the ghost, actually pulling up, asking if she wanted a lift. Eventually, the police came down here to figure out what the traffic jam was, and they flashed their press passes and said they were shooting something. And they said, well, let's hurry up and get done because we got people complaining they're seeing the ghost again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny, but it's been going on for probably... more than 30 years now, actually closer to 40 years. The first official report that I know of was in 1939. A man by the name of Jerry Palis had picked up a girl at Liberty Grove and Hall near 47th and Mozart, and he was interviewed on Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack when that program was still on. And he claimed to have danced with this girl the entire evening. He only noticed that the only thing that was kind of unusual that he mentioned in the interview that she was very cold to the touch. And much more than a cold shoulder. I mean, really cold to the touch. And later she asked for a ride home, but instead of going to the address that she wanted to go to, she actually got a physical address. She wanted to go past the cemetery first. And on the way to the cemetery, she began to act very strange as they approached the main gate. She told Jerry that she had to get out of the car, run towards the gates for some reason, and that he couldn't follow. And before he could figure out what was going on, she jumped from the car, she ran towards those gates, and disappeared in plain view of Jerry before she ever reached the gates.
Oh, wow.
And the next day, he went to that address because he didn't know really what had happened. I mean, he couldn't believe he had been with a ghost that evening. Uh-huh. And he went to that address, and before he even opened the door or rang the doorbell, this older woman yanked the door open and said, "What do you want?" "I wanted to see if Mary got in safely." "You don't know what you're talking about. Mary's not here." And... Before she slammed the door in his face, he pointed to a picture of this girl on a piano in the front room. He said, "That's the girl I was with last night." He goes, "You couldn't have. That my daughter's been dead for 3 years."
Oh, man.
And these are the kind of stories that have been circulating in and around this cemetery for, you know, next year it'll be going on for 40 years now.
Yeah, totally. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break here for a second, Dale. Go ahead, Doug.
This was the fastest half hour, because when you brought up the... Oh, I hear an echo.
That's all right.
When you brought up the Winamp, I'm like, no way. And I even leaned over to see. Yeah, it's break time. I had no clue.
Yeah, no idea.
No clue.
When we come back, can we talk about spirit photography, Dale?
Sure.
Yeah, because one of the photographs from GRS is phenomenal. And so we want to chat about some of this stuff.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Let's take a quick break here. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We'll be right back with Dale Kazmarek after this.
Would you like to listen to Ghostly Talk live on your cell phone? Perhaps you have a comment for us or our guests. All you have to do is dial 605-475-8590. When asked for the conference code, dial 555-1081, followed by the pound sign.
What are we made of? Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? These are just a few of the questions explored each week by naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant Dr. Rita Louise on Just Energy Radio. Explore your possibilities every Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join us at JustEnergyRadio.com.
To go bump in the night. Night Watchers at nightwatchers.info. Whether you're an amateur or a professional paranormal investigator, the Night Watchers want you to investigate some of the country's most haunted places. The Night Watchers want you. Already in a group? Perfect. Groups are welcome. Join today at nightwatchers.info. Night Watchers at nightwatchers.info. The future of paranormal investigation.
Tim Yancey, inviting you to explore the fascinating realm of the paranormal, ghosts and hauntings, Bigfoot, UFOs, and alien abductions. Join me live every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. with the foremost authorities and experts in the world regarding the mysterious realm of the unexplained. The Encounters Paranormal Radio Series, as heard on WBZT 1230 AM. EncountersBroadcasting.com. This is Ghostly Talk.
Say it again.
You love that. You love that slider right there, don't you?
Well, no, we rearranged the board along with getting the new system put in place here. I made some change to how we got the board set up, and I keep bringing down the phone line for some reason and not the audio channel to make it sound like we're professional broadcasters, right? So I think that sounds
You love
better.
Channel 7 and 8.
I'm used to it, you know, and I, thank goodness, okay, I think we're
Well,
back.
I was shopping, so I don't know.
you were shopping.
And I was chatting. And jamming to MFPS.
That we played all MFPS songs tonight. We missed one of them, unfortunately, at the very beginning of the show because we had a lot to talk about. All the tunes we played tonight were from my favorite Plaid Straitjacket. And I'm going to point this out, too. Sorry, Dale, you got to hold on.
One moment.
I got to point this out. If you want to download the whole album for free, Homicidal Ranks by my old band, My Favorite Plaid Straitjacket, if you go to www.myspace.com/team-MFPS, that's our MySpace page we have, kind of like the memorial page for MFPS. Mm-hmm. We have a link up there right below the music player thing. That you can download the whole album, really high bitrate MP3 for free.
I have the whole album on my iPod.
Yeah, artwork and everything included. It's all yours for the taking.
I need to put it on.
I love it.
It's all up there for you guys to download.
Sitting there
for
on
free.
My server, and I didn't.
It's not your server. Yeah, man.
Oops.
So yeah, check that out. Just remember Alex. You know, we really miss him, and rest in peace, Alex. Again, we are talking to Dale Kaczmarek. Finally, after all these years.
Yes. www.ghostresearch.org.
Yes, sir. And we were on the break. We were actually looking at some pictures on.
We Dale, found the, yeah, we found the monks.
The monks.
Yes.
Yeah.
We
monks
found that photo.
And we want to talk about this for a second. We're looking at this photo right now, Dale, and I have to say it's. This was taken by you, if I'm correct, sir. It says right by Dale Kaczmarek. You took this photo, right, Dale?
Correct. I had heard about the reports for years, as I mentioned earlier. I talked about the monk-like figures that have been seen that have been roaming freely in the house and been seen by people in the upstairs windows, sometimes descending the staircases and so forth. And this was long. This is back in probably 1979 or so when this was taken. And this was long before we had any of the high-tech gear we have today, all the EMF meters and so forth. So, I mean, my basic arsenal was just a tape recorder, a camcorder, an old, big, hunky, giant, big camcorder, and a 35-millimeter camera, pretty much. And that's really all I had. So when we were going to locations, we were just limited by what we had. Just began snapping just kind of random photographs. We were using a 35-millimeter, which is my camera of choice, and using black and white high-speed infrared film. A bit about infrared film, for those that aren't aware of the aspects of it, it's very sensitive to heat. It's very sensitive to light. It must be unloaded in total darkness. But it does have a big window of opportunity to capture things that are not normally visible to the naked eye, because you're using a section of the infrared spectrum between 800 and 900 nanometers, which is above the red, above what we're sensitive to, and sometimes things do show up in there that are not visible to the naked eye. And just using this film, snapping it around, I just happened to be, as they say, the right place at the right time, and something did show up. I didn't see it. And, of course, if I would have saw it, I probably would have used the entire roll of film up. But I only had it one snapshot, and I went some other places around the area and snapped some other shots, and I got the film back about a week later. This is a film you have to send out and go to a special lab to develop. I got it back. I was really quite amazed to see that there were at least four figures on the stairs. The one directly in the center actually looks like it's shrouded in a monk's hood. It actually looks like there's a hood on his head. It looks like it's two hands kind of coming out of the robe locked together in prayer. And the other three are kind of like on other stairs around this figure. Actually, one, it looks like it's almost superimposed within the banister itself, the handrail. And throughout the years, now people have been snapping other pictures. This is a few years before we began our ghost tours, but this is one site that we go quite often in the spring and summer tours. To Hull House, and people have been snapping photographs there, and sometimes they've captured things as well. Like I said, mists, fogs, other figures. It's before I began actually using two cameras, because really what I prefer to use now is two 35-millimeter cameras, set up the different types of film on separate tripods, and using cable releases, snap a picture of a location at the same time simultaneously and then compare the pictures.
Uh-huh.
Something shows up on the infrared film, doesn't show up on the high-speed film taken the same second, then it's usually an indicator that something was there.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a shadow, if it's something natural, a reflection, it should show up on both cameras.
I haven't heard digital yet from you at all, Dale. Do you use any digital photography at all?
We do use digital photography. We use digital photography, though, in conjunction with 35mm.
Okay.
The reason we use the digital technology is because you get that instant photograph.
Yeah.
You can actually see if there may be something there. Then you can employ your other cameras, your equipment, camcorders, whatever the case may be, to set up and shoot additional pictures or do, you know, research in that particular area.
Okay.
But the thing with digital, and it's one thing that's also, you know, a lot of people have, you know, said that they get are these orbs, you know, constantly these orbs. Now, there are a lot of explanations for orbs, and I'm not a big fan of orbs. You don't find but only one orb photograph on my website, and it may even be explainable, actually.
Okay.
The orbs, though, can be so many different explanations, and if anybody can try these experiments at home and get many orb photographs. Just take a dusty rag and shake it in front of a camera and snap a picture.
Oh, yeah. This is a hot topic right now, too, Dale.
Yeah.
I mean, people are really, and it seems like it's getting, I mean, I thought it would slow down after a while. Like, people would go, yeah, you know what, I think the people are right that if you take a dusty rag, like you just said, and throw it in front of a camera, you'll see orbs, and that kind of explains a lot of this stuff out. But it seems like more and more people, there's just a strong contingent that are still for orbs.
Want
you know?
To keep talking about
well,
it.
Well, then there's still, I mean, I think, and I'm sure there's a few out there, Dale, that maybe, you know, maybe the real deal. Who knows? But I think the majority of them really are, you know, they're just a natural phenomenon.
So, unfortunately, you've got to throw out all of them, at least as evidence. I mean, if a certain orb and a certain photo means something to you, then there you go. I mean, okay, so it's your grandfather looking over his grandson or whatever. There you go. Okay, that's fine.
Well, that's cathartic, and that's good for you.
But you can't just submit that to a research society and say, oh, here's a picture of, you know, a ghost.
It doesn't work. It's not quite that easy. I wish it was.
Now, in Chicago is one of the most notoriously haunted, at least in legend. I mean, it's taken on a life of its own. The legends and the mysteries and the talk, just the amount of talk, at one cemetery in Chicago has generated, and that's Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
Yeah, we mentioned that a little bit ago, but
we
have a photo that you know that I've been looking at this, and I was not aware, Dale. I have to say, I apologize for this. That, you know, the world famous Bachelor's Grove photo, the girl on the grave.
This is the one, Dale. You've got to get like people writing to you or calling you or whatever on the tours and saying, you know, you've got to hear both sides constantly about this particular photo, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I had done a segment for the Discovery Channel just a few years back called Phantom Photographs. And, of course, obviously that was one of the photographs that they wanted to take a look at because it was taken with infrared film. This is the photograph that's on the website is actually an enlargement of the original photograph. And it was actually subjected, I wasn't aware they were going to do this, but they actually subjected this photograph to Kodak in Rochester, New York, so-called experts in the field of photography, not spirit photography, but photography in general. And the gentleman that was in there seemed to indicate that he believed that it was a real person sitting on there that was casting a shadow, and it wasn't really a person, not a ghost at all. If you look very carefully at the photograph, you'll notice that the entire figure, the gravestone, and everything is in the shadows of the trees. So there's no shadow cast by the person because it's not in the sun, it's in the shadows already. And he didn't catch that. So I wasn't able to rebuck pretty much on the photograph. But the idea for this whole investigation, we went out there with a group of our members, the Ghost Research Society members, and everybody was given a map of the location. They were told to walk through in teams of two with equipment and to stop whenever the equipment went off or if they smelled something, heard something, felt something, to write it down. And then we later compared these, and when we got all together, and a number of people had indicated they felt very unusual or the meters went off near this checkerboard tombstone. which had no name on it. A lot of the tombstones in Bachelor Grove, unfortunately, have been toppled over, been dug up, graffiti. Some are wore away. You can't even tell the names, and parts of the stones are missing.
Mm-hmm.
So this had no name on it. We went back to that checkerboard tombstone, and we took a series of photographs with different cameras. This one member of our group, Jude Huff, had a 35-millimeter camera loaded with infrared film that particular afternoon. And she took several pictures from different angles. And only on one picture, very clearly, this woman apparently in what looks like, to me, old Victorian gown of some kind, not of this era. It's pretty down to her ankles. She's in long brown hair, kind of looking off in profile. And it didn't show up on, you know, obviously to the naked eye. It only showed up on the film. Now, in looking at that photograph very carefully, and we have really, you know, we have a lot of software we analyze our photographs with, that we can kind of do things with. We can play around with the contrast, the brightness. We can actually unblur a photograph if we know which way the camera was moved, so forth and so on. Parts of that woman's body is actually semi-transparent. You can actually see the trees and bushes through her, parts of her knee and parts of her head, which indicates that she's not all there. She's basically semi-transparent. She's not a real person. There's no distinct movement or blurring indicating that the person, if it was a real person, say, had moved, causing that distortion. So very clear as you could probably get, being an enlarged infrared black and white photograph. It's very clear that the image is not, itself is not blurred. It's actually that you can see through this person to the trees and bushes and foliage behind this person. Now, of course, I've gotten a lot of people throughout the years that have claimed that it's a fake, it's a real person, it was staged, and I am not about to put more than 30-some years of my research up for grabs to fake a photograph of any kind. I mean, I'm just not that kind of a person. We were there. We knew that what the situation was. There were at least seven or eight other people that were taking snapshots there that knew there was nobody in that cemetery dressed like that. Some even claimed it was my wife. And it just doesn't look anything all like my wife. So, I mean, I've gotten skeptics look at it, and I've gotten other people that say they see other things in the photograph as well. But it's something that is very controversial. It's been, you know, circulated around the Internet. On different websites throughout the years.
Oh, God, it's been every...
This is
Dale.
One of the classics.
Dale, listen,
I mean, the thing is...
When people think, you know, when people go, hey, you know, I...
You think of Brown Lady and you think of the lady at Bachelor's Grove.
Yeah, Bachelor's Grove lady. I mean, it's one of those photos that it's world famous. I mean, yeah, and the debate's a given. It's going to be hugely debated.
Here's what really gets me, Dale, is that you're going through what... Everybody would go through if they got a photo like this. So there's people out there with their cameras, with their, you know, whether they have infrared or regular, you know, film, or they've got, you know, the digital and recorders. You go out and you get something, right? And you put it up, and you know who else goes through this a lot is Missouri.
Yeah, the Missouri.
The folks in Missouri. They go through this whenever they catch something.
Anomaly,
and they get anomalies. They get what I think are probably true anomalies, but then people do the same thing. They just attack right away. Yet, this is the kind of thing that people want to get on film. So this is the kind of thing to me, and I have to say, I was skeptical too, Dale. I don't just jump in and say, oh, well, obviously that's a ghost, and, you know, I believe now. You know, when I look at something, I look at somebody's, I don't know the photographer, I don't know what was going on, I don't know all the facts, I don't know what they think of it. So I look at it and I just, you know, withhold judgment, I should say. I don't jump on it and say, oh my gosh. But I happened to be talking to Troy Taylor one day, a while ago, before, this was well before the last conference, the AGS conference that we went to and talked to Dale at. This was a couple before that. And I was talking to him, and he said something about Chicago, and of course I'm like, ooh, I'd love to see Bachelor's Grove, but of course it's totally closed at night. I mean, they patrol, it's another one
and
of them
depressing.
That... Plus
you mentioned on the bird
yeah,
body.
Plus it's depressing and overgrown. But, you know, maybe not in 1991, but in 2000...
In 17 years, you would not be able to see that.
Wow. So they quit taking care of it, yeah. But it's definitely a, you know, so now you wouldn't be able to do that. But I mentioned Bachelor's Grove, and then, of course, I mentioned the photograph, and I'm like, what do you think of that, you know, the classic? And he says, oh, it's absolutely real.
Troy said that.
Troy Taylor said, okay. To me, that is an absolutely real photograph. And I'm like, but it doesn't it seem too perfect? And you know, that's another word that I use. And I use that same word.
We just said that happened to us this past weekend,
With the light.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier in the show.
If something is too perfect, I assume it's normal. It's mundane. It's not supernatural.
Or it isn't supernatural, yeah.
And I said, but it's so perfect. It looks like a woman sitting on a stone. And he says, I don't care. I've talked to Dale. I've talked to Jude. I've talked to it is absolutely a ghost. It is a photo of a ghost, and so he Dale was absolutely 100% convinced, and that really helped me. I was like, wow, I have to look at that photo again, and I did.
Yeah,
and I'm like, now when I look at it, I get this feeling in my chest, in my shoulders of I'm looking at something that really is important with a capital I. That's why I really dig that
photo.
What
do you think? I mean, after looking at this photo for 17 years, Dale.
And hearing all sides and every which way you can.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think this lady that's sitting, this is obviously a female. You can see the longer hair, the dress, everything, whatever it may be. And what do you think she's looking at? I mean, that's what I've always wondered. And I'd like to ask you this also, Dale. What do you think she's looking at? What is she looking towards, do you think?
Well, you have to remember the history of Bachelor's Grove. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of grave desecration out there. There's been a lot of vandalism. There's been reports of satanic worship. There's been reports of bodies being dumped in the lagoon, possibly by the Capone era. So there's a lot of things that seem to stir up cemeteries. Usually I tell people that cemeteries are not good places to look for ghosts, really, because if you died and came back as a ghost, where would you want to hang out? Probably not in a cemetery.
Right.
There are many exceptions to the rules, and Bachelor's Grove being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It may have a lot to do with just simply the vandalism up there, or maybe she is just so forlorn and just depressed herself on how the cemetery is just deteriorating that they tend to come back and just literally, to coin a term, haunt the place for a while. I wish I could put a name to that ghost. Unfortunately, the records are so sketchy. I mean, it's still one of the biggest files I have on any haunted site anywhere,
yeah.
By far. But there are so many, so little as far as photographs of the actual people that are buried there. So you really can't compare to say it's this person or it's this person. It may not even be the person that's actually buried underneath that checkerboard tombstone, for all we know.
But it's somebody related to
that.
The
what I seem to get a lot from people is that photograph is just, the word they use is too good to be true. That's what I hear a lot, too.
Well, yeah, and that thing is, we said earlier, like, you know, it's too perfect. It's just too perfect.
And that's something that I use. Oh, it's perfect, meaning it really, my instinct at that point is to either dismiss it, at least withhold judgment on it.
That's,
yeah. Because I'm a pretty open-minded person, so I don't leap and start attacking, although there are people who do. You know, we've got so few minutes, we didn't even get to EVPs.
We didn't get to anything.
Hardly anything we wanted to talk about. But you know... Dale, wow, what the work you're doing out there in Chicago, you know, the excursions into the unknown haunted Chicagoland tours, the ghost hunting, the ghost research, and
well, all the years you put into this.
And the years, this is just amazing to finally catch up with you.
Yeah, no kidding. It's been a long time coming, Dale, and we appreciate you joining us finally on the show.
What's coming up for GRS and you?
Well, actually, this weekend coming up, we're actually going to be traveling out to the Indianapolis area to do an overnight investigations in some locations, including we're going to be visiting the Hanna House. We're going to be going down to a jail down in Martinsville, a very haunted jail we have permission to spend an overnight in. We're going to be setting up our gear and doing some investigative work there. Also checking into places like Step Cemetery, which is down near Bloomington.
Oh, yeah. We've been there.
And even Tippi Canoe Battlefield, which is very haunted as well. So we're going to be out there all Saturday and Sunday, checking into some of these places right around Indianapolis and just south of Indianapolis.
You know, or we can give you a tip for a place on the air here. It's totally
cool. Yes,
definitely. You know what? You'd have to look at... You probably... I don't know exactly where it's at.
Yes.
Oh, you know where...
MSC Collins Bridge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Why not? Why wouldn't we tell them that, Bonnie?
Bonnie doesn't like... the Edna C. Collins Bridge at all. She doesn't think it's haunted. She just doesn't. It's not her thing.
I never said. Wait a minute.
Okay.
A minute.
I agree. You did not say that.
I never said. I don't think it's haunted.
But it said it right on the sign. It said, you know, this bridge is thought to be haunted by Mother and her
son. I know I have a picture of the sign, but I never said that. Don't put words in my mouth.
Body did not say that.
Well, anyways, Dale. this bridge I mentioned, that Bonnie mentioned.
We like it.
It's a very... We've got a really interesting EVP off of there, which I actually, you know, and our listeners have been beaten to death by it, so I won't go into it anymore.
So we want new EVPs from there.
Well, what I'll do is I'll send it to you via email. I'll send you the link for it, Dale, via email, so you can check it out if you want.
Good.
Really interesting EVP we got off of that bridge, which is probably one of the only interesting things we've ever gotten in our career as ghost hunters, but whole different thing aside. Unfortunately, we are totally out of time, though. Doug, what do you
Your have? Website, www.ghostresearch.org. Hang on the line for a moment, Dale.
Yeah, don't leave us just yet, Dale. Stay on the phone.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'd like to thank also Dr. Claude Windenberger for showing up, unconditionalfreedom.com. And, of course, you know what, Alex, wherever you are, I hope you get internet radio out there because we're talking about you. We love you.
And we love you, man, and no show next Sunday.
No show next Sunday. We're out of here. We're going to be at Prodigy in the Park. Yes, rest in peace, Alex Clem. This show was for you.
Ghostly Talk! You have been listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal Talk Radio. The Ghostly Talk audio program is distributed for free under the Open Content License. Please share with all your friends and support independent media.